I'll tell you what I think is happening, and has been for some time. And it's another John Henry story, of course, because Johnny's stories are always good for explaining what's going on. Not many people know this about Johnny, but in addition to being a humorist and folklorist and a noted freedom fighter, John Henry had a career in law enforcement. In fact, he was in the Texas Rangers. He was a captain in the Rangers. He was six at the time. And his friend Boots Cooper, who was seven, was the sheriff. The two of them used to do a whole lot of serious law enforcement work out behind the Falk family place in South Austin. And one day, Johnny's mama, having two such fine officers right there on the property, said to him, "Now, boys, I want y'all to go down to the hen house and get that chicken snake out of the hen house." Well, Johnny and Boots were all excited about this big assignment. They went galloping down to the hen house on their brooms. They tethered their brooms. They went in and they looked through all the nests on the bottom shelf of the hen house and did not find the chicken snake. They were of an age and of a size where to see up on the second shelf, they had to stand on tiptoe, see if there was a snake there, and there was. I myself have never been nose to nose with a chicken snake, but I always took Johnny's word for it that it will just scare the living shit out of you. And it scared Johnny and Boots so bad, they both tried to get out of the hen house at the same time, doing considerable damage to both themselves and the hen house door in the process. And they finally came trailing back up the porch all shamefaced. Miss Falk looked at them and said, "Boys, boys, what is wrong with you? You know perfectly well that a chicken snake will not hurt you." And that's when Boots Cooper said this amazing thing. He said, "Yes, ma'am, but there's some things that'll scare you so bad you'll hurt yourself." And you know that is what we do again and again in this country. We get so scared of some terrible menace. We get so scared of communism or crime, drugs or illegal aliens, terrorists, that we hurt ourselves. We think we're going to make ourselves safer by making ourselves less free. Now, you know, as a logical proposition, that does not hold a drop of water. When you make yourself less free, you're not safer, you're just less free. But it's amazing how consistent that reaction is. We're really scared, and we say, "Let's make ourselves less free, that'll fix it." And of course, it didn't work worth a damn. And then we always have to go back and undo it, and it takes time and patience. But it is, and this is, I wanted to talk particularly to the students tonight about this. This is the world's most painless civics lecture. You're about to hear will last less than 2 minutes, and you will barely feel it. Here is my civics lecture. I know that most college students today despise electoral politics, and I fully understand and sympathize with that point of view, believe me. Been covering it for a long time. And I know you think that it's all corrupt and awful and hardly worth bothering with, and in fact, not worth bothering with at all. The trouble is you don't have a choice. You cannot look at politics in this country as though it were a picture on a wall or a show on television, and you get to sit there and say, "You know, I just don't care for that. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not interested. They're all crooks, and nothing I can do about it." You don't get that option. It's not something out there that you can like or not like. This is the warp and the woof of your life. How deep you will be buried when you die, and the qualifications of the people who prescribe your eyeglasses, and the textbooks your children will read in school, and 1,000 other things are all decided by the political process in this country. You cannot divorce yourself from it. And furthermore, you have a responsibility. We are all of us, the heirs of the most magnificent political legacy any people has ever received. We believe these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We believe that governments are instituted among men to secure these rights, and that whenever any government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Those are ideals so revolutionary and so important that people have been dying all over the world for hundreds of years just for the chance to live under those principles, and they are still doing it today. They died for it in South Africa, they died for it in Myanmar, they died for it at Tiananmen Square, and very recently some Americans gave their lives for approximately the same cause in Iraq. You do not let a legacy like that die out of boredom or cynicism or inanition. Or you're saying, well, I'm just too busy. Oh, they're all crooks. There's nothing I can do. Government is not those people in your state capital here in Madison. It is not those people in Washington. It is us. It is you. It is me. It's our deal. We own this country. We run this country. We are the board of directors. They have to do what we say. Thank you. All right. Now, it seems to me that I should tell more funny stories before we get to questions. Often asked, my all-time favorite Texas legislator, never been able to choose. Nope, just too many. But I am having sort of a Mike Martin day. You come to think of it, I'll have a Warren Chisholm day right after I tell my Mike Martin story. Okay, so we're going to lower the tenor of the evening here by telling true stories about Texas legislators. Mike Martin was an early harbinger of the moral majority. He got elected from Longview. He ran on a platform of being pro-family and pro-American. It was pretty controversial, but he won anyway. Mike came down to Austin, and he turned out to be legislatively impaired. This guy was such a hopeless dipshit that he could not get a single bill passed. I mean, he could not even get memorial resolutions for people who had died in his district passed. It was pitiful. And so after his first session, his first 2 years in office, it looked bad for Mike's reelection, because it's hard to get reelected when you have done do squat. I mean, there was zip on his record. And we all thought it looked bad for Mike, but who knew that he really had a lot more imagination than anybody had ever given him credit for, and he came up with this wonderful scheme to get himself reelected. What he did was he paid his cousin Eddie to shoot him in the arm with a shotgun, a touch I always liked. And then he claimed that it had been done by a satanic and communistic cult that was out to get him on account of he, Mike Martin, was so pro-family and pro-American. Well, I mean, it worked like a charm. God damn, there were screaming headlines all over the state. Legislator attacked by a satanic cult. I mean, it was really a big deal. And people, Mike was being interviewed from his hospital bed. God, it was wonderful for the reelection purpose. And we sent the Rangers out to hunt down the satanic communistic cult. And I don't know about Wisconsin, but they're in very short supply in Texas. And Rangers couldn't find these people, but Mike was just reaping tons of publicity and looking good for reelection. When, alas, as often happens in these cases, the whole conspiracy came unglued when Cousin Eddie got drunk in a honky-tonk one night and spilled the beans. Now, here is where we Texans can be so proud of our legislature. very few legislatures would have had the foresight to make it illegal to pay somebody to shoot you. Probably still legal right here in this state, but let me tell you, don't come down to Texas and try to hire somebody to shoot you. No. And with this, old Mike becomes a wanted man. And, of course, instead of facing up to his problems, I'm sorry to say that Mike took it on the lam. He went underground. He went into hiding. We sent the Rangers after him. For 3 weeks, they hunted him high. They hunted him low. At last, they tracked him to earth. He was at his mama's house near Longview. He was found hiding in the stereo cabinet. It's my belief he was in the stereo cabinet because he always did want to be the speaker. All right, now we're definitely going to lower the tenor of the evening. And then we will go to questions. As you know, there is a sodomy case out of Texas in front of the Supreme Court of the United States, where those lucky nine justices will have the great pleasure of meditating on the wisdom of the lawmakers of Texas. And I'm here to tell you how it came about this last time. We've always had in our penal code something called 2106. It makes it illegal to be gay in Texas. It's never stopped anybody that we could see, but it is illegal. And we had a fit of common sense in state government. I think Ann was governor. And first of all, we had to rewrite the penal code. I mean, the penal code was so full of such old garbage and hideous old stuff that nobody ever used. Everybody just knew it had to be rewritten. But we knew that we could not let the legislature do it because, of course, you know, they always do terrible things. And so instead, we had a blue ribbon commission, and we had a bunch of law school professors and distinguished jurists and district attorneys and all kinds of people like that. And they were all on this commission, and they went through the penal code, and they threw out all the stupid old stuff that nobody uses anymore. And one of the things they threw out was 2106. And this revised penal code went first to the Texas Senate. And to everyone's amazement, the guys in the Senate just gutted it up and voted the whole damn thing through without a single change. And we were all sitting there kind of looking at each other going, God damn, you know, this might actually happen. And then it went to the House, the more conservative of the two bodies. And looking in the House was Warren Chisholm, a Bible-thumping dwarf from Pampa. And Warren immediately leaped to his feet and moved to reinstate homosexual sodomy in the penal code. Well, all the guys in the House were afraid everybody would think they was queer if they didn't vote for it, so they did. And they put homosexual sodomy back in the penal code. Then some constitutional scholar explains to old Warren that unless he moves to reinstate heterosexual sodomy, it's all going to be held unconstitutional on the grounds of being unbalanced and discriminatory. Well, Warren, he's nothing loath. He leaps up. He moves to reinstate heterosexual sodomy in the penal code. Whereupon a really interesting debate ensued. We heard from several graduates of Texas A&M. People were saying at the back mic, saying things like, well, Warren, suppose I'm in bed with my legally wedded spouse, and I like, kind of slip and wind up in the wrong hole. You won't send me to prison for that, do you? Yeah. Warren at the front mic say, yes, I do. It's against nature in the Bible. So in the end, all the guys in the House was afraid that everybody would think they was pre-votes if they didn't vote for this, so they did. And we reinstated heterosexual sodomy in the penal code as well, and Warren was at the front mic with his big Christian ally, Talmadge Heflin, from down in Houston, and the two of them were high-fiving and slapping each other on the back. The press corps called over the sergeant-at-arms and said, Sergeant, you have to go over and reprimand both those men, because under the provisions of the amendments just passed by Representative Chisholm, it is now illegal for a prick to touch an asshole in this state.